Mike Pence goes around saying, I'm a Christian, I'm a conservative, and I'm a Republican in that order. He doesn't say I'm an American.
Since coming out a couple of years ago, I have identified with the word gay. As I've grown older, I've come to respect the word queer more and more.
For this historic tour, they learned songs in several other languages.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Lagos birthday party arrests accelerate Nigeria's anti-gay crackdown, a young critic confronts the Q word, and Portland's gay men's chorus serenades China. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michelle Yater.
And I'm Brian DeShazer.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending September 1st, 2018. A court in Nigeria has charged 57 men with committing homosexual acts and belonging to a secret cult. Each faces up to 14 years in prison. The charges against each man also include 3 counts of conspiracy and being at an unlawful gathering. The arrests this week in a hotel banquet hall in Lagos come on the heels of a similar raid on a hotel room in the southeastern state of Abia in mid-August that netted 6 men. A few of the defendants in the latest anti-queer crackdown in Nigeria denied being gay and told the local Premium Times newspaper that it was a birthday party for one of the men. Some also insisted that there were several women at the party who were getting dressed up in a nearby room and that police officers told any of them that they saw just to leave. All 57 men entered not guilty pleas during their arraignment on August 30th, and each was ordered by the magistrate to be remanded unless bail equivalent to about $600 could be posted. The case was adjourned until September 10th. Nigerian authorities continue to trumpet multiple arrests of gay people. 42 men attending an HIV/AIDS education workshop in a hotel conference room in Lagos last year were infamously arrested and also charged with committing homosexual acts.
Bermuda's Court of Appeal is uniquely composed of foreign judges flown in for each specific case. It was announced this week that they will hear an appeal November 7th through 9th of rulings by Bermuda's Supreme Court rebuffing the government's efforts to overturn marriage equality, a law repealing marriage equality in the British Overseas Territory and replacing it with inferior domestic partnerships, took effect on June 1st this year. It gave the Caribbean island the distinction of being the first national government in the world to repeal marriage equality. But 5 days later, the portion of the law that re-banned marriage equality was struck down by the Supreme Court, the same court that had first legalized marriage equality in May 2017. If the Court of Appeal rules against it, Bermuda's government could make one final appeal to the United Kingdom Privy Council, where opponents of marriage equality would probably face an uphill battle.
Anti-queer forces in Taiwan have apparently gathered enough signatures to force a referendum on marriage equality. The island's Grand Council of Justices ruled in May 2017 that limiting civil marriage to heterosexual couples was unconstitutional. However, they gave lawmakers until May 2019 to pass marriage equality legislation. If members of the Legislative Yuan don't act by May of next year, and they seem reluctant to do so, marriage equality would come into force by default. But a petition with more than 650,000 signatures demanding a public vote on the issue was submitted to election authorities this week by a group calling itself Happiness of the Next Generation Alliance. The referendum language specifically denies marriage equality to same-gender couples and requires using means other than marriage to legally recognize those couples. If the Central Election Commission confirms the required number of valid signatures, a referendum would likely take place on November 24th to coincide with local elections already scheduled for that date. anti-queer foes have already brought in Brian Brown of America's National Coalition for Marriage, which, having failed to stop marriage equality in the U.S., has been actively promoting discrimination elsewhere. With subtitles translating his message into Mandarin, Brown urges voters to support the referendum and protect marriage in Taiwan. LGBTQ activists have reportedly qualified a competing referendum to establish marriage equality, insisting that civil unions or something similar is not equality. While a referendum cannot directly overturn a constitutional court ruling, recent news reports say that the government is required to propose laws that comply with referenda outcomes. So the government would have to propose marriage equality or some kind of civil unions law, depending on the referenda results. If a civil unions law were enacted instead of marriage equality, that action could apparently trigger a new lawsuit.
In other news, the U.S. Supreme Court refused this week to force the city of Philadelphia to allow the foster care placement of children with Catholic social services. The church-backed agency refuses to consider applications from same-gender couples. The High Court rejected without comment the agency's request for an injunction that would have required the city to allow it to place children in foster homes headed only by heterosexual couples, while litigation over the issue continues in lower courts. A majority of Supreme Court justices are required to grant an injunction. Even though it's short one justice with the pending nomination by Donald Trump of Brett Kavanaugh to fill the vacancy left by the retirement of Anthony Kennedy, only three of the current 8-member court voted to grant the injunction: Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Trump appointee Neil Gorsuch. Catholic Social Services claims that considering same-gender couples as prospective foster parents would amount to endorsing marriage equality, which church doctrine strongly opposes. The City of Philadelphia insists that every fostering and adoption agency abide by its anti-discrimination laws, which include protections for LGBTQ people. Using an increasingly familiar argument, Catholic Social Services, which is part of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, is claiming that the city is violating its constitutional rights to religious freedom and free speech.
In yet another lower court affirmation of the rights of LGBTQ people to be free from discrimination, the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled this week that under the Federal Fair Housing Act, a landlord can be liable for not protecting a tenant from documented discriminatory harassment by other tenants. The Chicago-based 7th Circuit, which reviews cases from Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin, decided that elderly lesbian Marsha Wetzel had been subjected to verbal harassment and abuse at the hands of other residents of Glen St. Andrew Living Community, a Chicago suburb senior housing facility, including three separate physical assaults, and that the landlord can be held accountable for purposefully failing to protect her. Equality activists say the 7th Circuit decision represents a significant interpretation of the Fair Housing Act in declaring that the law protects LGBTQ people from discrimination. Karen Lowy of Lambda Legal, which is representing Wetzel, called it a tremendous victory. The lawsuit can now continue in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois, which had dismissed the case. The court today struck a blow for me and for all senior citizens, gay or straight, Wetzel said in a Lambda Legal press release, who deserve to feel safe and to be treated with respect. That's not too much to ask. No one should have to endure what I endured because of who I am.
Meanwhile, a group of 16 states is urging the U.S. Supreme Court to rule that companies can fire workers based on their sexual orientation or gender identity without violating federal workplace anti-discrimination laws. They argue that Congress didn't intend the ban on discrimination based on sex in Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act to cover lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender employees. A few lower courts have already ruled that Title VII does indeed protect LGBTQ people, while other courts have rejected that idea. The August 23rd Friend of the Court brief, spearheaded by Nebraska Attorney General Doug Peterson, specifically targets an appeals court decision against a Michigan funeral home that fired a transgender worker, currently being considered for review by the U.S. Supreme Court, and asserts that Title VII's protections based on sex are limited only to biologically born women. A total of 13 Republican attorneys general, including those representing Texas, Alabama, Kansas, and Utah, signed on to the brief. three GOP governors, Kentucky's Matthew Bevin, Maine's Paul LePage, and Mississippi's Phil Bryant, also joined in the court filing. The Supreme Court is expected to decide in the coming months whether to take up the Michigan case. It's been asked to consider two other cases testing whether bias based on sexual orientation is also a form of sex discrimination banned under Title VII.
And finally, a judge in the state of Utah made news this week when he declared that 74-year-old Bonnie Forrester was legally wed to her common-law spouse, Beverly Guessant, who died in May at the age of 82, a few weeks after the couple celebrated their 50th anniversary together. Their attorney, Roger Houle, proposed the unusual action. Judge Patrick Corum decided that the couple could be considered married since December 20, 2013, when the state opened civil marriage to same-gender couples, or even sometime in 1968, when the couple began living together, although that would require a more complex legal process. According to Corum, this was Utah's second posthumous marriage of a same-gender couple. A previous case declared a woman married to her deceased partner who had died in a car crash. Bonnie Forrester, who says Beverly Guessant was her soulmate, told the Salt Lake Tribune that she was numb from happiness. "I'm a married woman," she said. "I've waited 50 years.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending September 1st, 2018. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the always evolving thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
Ironically, queer is no longer used as commonly as a slur as gay is. But beyond that, the word queer puts power back in our hands.
What's the right word? Later in the program. What's behind the adoring gaze? What makes a vice president so slavishly mimic his boss that he's even caught on camera moving his bottled water to match? Mike Pence's own potential presidential buzz had been pretty much silenced after his disastrous support as governor for Indiana's ill-fated religious freedom law. But then Donald Trump's now convicted ex-campaign manager Paul Manafort oiled Pence's way into the number two spot on the 2016 Republican presidential ticket. By all accounts, Pence not only fervently believes in God, but more dangerously, he's sure that God believes in Pence, and that all the madness of the Trump administration is God's mysterious method to elevate Pence and his conservative, godly agenda. Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Michael D'Antonio talked about his new biography of Pence on CNN.
Mike Pence goes around saying, "I'm a Christian, I'm a conservative, and I'm a Republican," in that order. He doesn't say, "I'm an American." He actually sort of heard in his being God's direction. And he thought that God was calling him to now be vice president and function as a president in waiting. We see Donald Trump in this huge crisis, this rolling chaos. And I think with every day, Mike Pence imagines he's one day closer to the Oval Office. I think he's positioning himself to be the normal guy, the guy you can trust. And he would like to impose a religiously inspired politics on our country. That means rolling back marriage equality. It means a ban on abortion, a whole host of policies that are religiously driven. And he's very upfront about it.
That was Michael D'Antonio, co-author with Peter Eisner of The Shadow President, The Truth About Mike Pence, published by Thomas Dunn Books.
Portland will be giving glimpses of life in the U.S. through song, all while experiencing life in China.
Yilu Ping An.
Or Bon Voyage. But first,
What's the word? What's the word? What's the word?
LGBT people who object to the use of the word queer usually cite that word's negative legacy. But what happens when the word gay becomes a pejorative?
This is Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Lucas, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcaster Alex talks about the gay rights movement's reclamation of certain slurs, and how he feels that queer is a more fitting label for him than just gay.
An effective civil rights movement has to do more than just sway public opinion in order to instill long-lasting change. Specifically, one task that most modern rights movements have faced is trying to change the public's vocabulary surrounding a topic. Both the feminist and black civil rights movements challenged the American people's views on certain words. In particular, the gay rights movement has battled to reclaim words that had been traditionally used as slurs against us. In a little more than half a century, the United States went from using the word queer as a slur to using it as a word of inclusion for any non-cisgender and non-heterosexual self-identification. As I've grown older, I've come to respect the word queer more and more, particularly because I've come to doubt the prevalence of the word gay. Since coming out a couple of years ago, I have identified with the word gay. It was the word that I was most familiar with, and it made sense. Largely, I haven't had any problems with using the word. I find that it accurately describes my sexuality, as I'm someone who is attracted to people of the same gender as myself. But my issues with the word have grown since my first coming out. It started with hearing gay filling the place that the word queer used to occupy. Lots of teenagers my age throw around the word gay as a descriptor for anything effeminate. Even when I looked up the word effeminate while writing this piece, to make sure that my definition of the word was correct, Google suggested pictures of gay actors and rainbow flags to me. Even beyond this, kids call plenty of random things gay, just as a general insult. Trying hard in school is gay, apparently, as I overheard recently. The use of the word gay to describe effeminacy in men supports a false stereotype, that all gay men are feminine, as well as an incorrect interpretation of what the word gay means. Gay describes sexuality, not gender. I'm not ready to use any word other than male in describing my gender. And I find that the word gay to describe myself only supports this stereotype. How can I be effeminate, gay, and cisgender without fueling this? Is that conscionable? I don't want to have to grapple with this problem whenever I think about my identity, which is something that I should resonate with, of course. Using the word queer solves some of these issues. Ironically, queer is no longer used as commonly as a slur as gay is. But beyond that, the word queer puts power back in our hands. The word queer was reclaimed as a unification of gay men and lesbian women during a wave of angry, radical protest in the late 80s and early 90s. Now, queer unifies more than just those two groups. We tore it out of the dictionary and put it back in as something entirely new. I like that queer implies some deviation from both the gender and sexuality binaries, unlike the word gay, which only describes sexuality. And I'm not sure I can say that I fall into the strict categories of cisgender and gay anymore. I've only just started to consider this change. But this thinking brings me back to the inexplicable first question that starts everyone's coming out process. I'm beginning to think that for me, the word queer might be a better answer than gay.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Our assistant producer is Josh Valley, and our executive producer is Mark Sofus. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
That's my word, that's my word, that's my word.
Hey everybody, this is Leah Delaria, and you are listening to This Way Out.
Portland, Oregon's Gay Men's Chorus has gone where no queer chorus has gone before. This Way Out correspondent Steve Sims has the story.
I'm gonna get you on a slow boat to China.
While they did not take a slow boat to China, the Portland Gay Men's Chorus is in China.
Let me approach all the people.
That is the Portland Gay Men's Chorus during their final rehearsal before leaving on a historic trip. 2 years in the planning, Portland Gay Men's Chorus is on a four-city tour of the People's Republic of China. And they will be the very first community chorus to tour and perform in the country. They will visit Beijing, Xi'an, Suzhou, and Shanghai. Their first concert will be a joint concert in Beijing with the Beijing Queer Chorus, who visited Portland in March. Portland Gay Men's Chorus was founded in 1980, starting with just 26 singers. Today they are a thriving arts organization with 150-plus singers. Portland's host in Beijing, the Beijing Queer Chorus, originally called the Shiny Jazzy Chorus, was founded in 2008, the year of the Beijing Olympics. The LGBT Center in Beijing decided they'd like to have a performing face. The music selected for the tour demonstrates two rich musical traditions from the United States, songs for Broadway and musical theater. The songs all have geographical references and makes for a fun way to share a little bit about the USA. The selections take you from New England, New York, and Baltimore. Down to the American South in New Orleans.
Louisiana Purchase. I'll tell you what it means. It means I'd like to sell you New Orleans. Come on, come on, and you all can go to town way down in New Orleans.
Up the Mississippi to St. Louis, into Iowa, across the wide Missouri. And on to Oregon.
Hail to thee, land of promise, my Oregon! Oregon!
The first three songs are part of the concert tour. New York, New York, performed there by the Boston Gay Men's Chorus. Louisiana Purchase, performed there by the original New York cast. Across the Wide Missouri, which was performed there by the Beijing Queer Chorus at a rehearsal at Reed College in Portland during their March 2018 visit. The last song, Oregon, My Oregon by Ian Dosher, will not be on the tour program. There will be a song, though, by Tom Simmons called Oregon. For this historic tour, they learned songs in several other languages. In addition to Mandarin, they learned an Aboriginal language. Korean, Portuguese, Spanish, and Hawaiian. Here now is the Portland Gay Men's Chorus singing the iconic work Never Never in Mandarin. Portland will be giving glimpses of life in the U.S. through song, all while experiencing life in China. Scheduled sightseeing trips include Tiananmen Square, Imperial Palace in the Forbidden City, and the Terracotta Museum. They will also take a rickshaw tour, visit a jade factory, and attend a calligraphy lecture. In the end, though, the tour is about connecting through music. The Portland Gay Men's Chorus, led by Executive Director Rick Young, who first had the idea for this tour, and who himself is half Chinese, departed on August 30th, and they will be in the People's Republic of China until September 9th. You can learn more at pdxgmc.org. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Sims.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michelle Yater and Brian DeShazer, from Outcasting Overtime's Lucas and Alex, produced by Mark Sulfus, and from Steve Sims. Stoppa performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who all make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KOOP Austin, Texas, Lofty Community Radio, Adelaide Hills, South Australia, WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned!